Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Yama Lake. Yama Lake spent 5 years serving in the United States Marine Corps and is currently in his final year at the University of Pittsburgh, majoring in film studies and English writing. He has been published in Black Ace, a West Coast anthology, and Desert Shovel, based in New Mexico. While stationed in Hawaii, he self-published a collection of poems and prose entitled The Ocean of Europa. Hi, Yama. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Good. I'm happy to have you on the show. You're going to start with some poems, right?
All right. Thank you. Okay. This first poem is called An Abstraction for Starbucks. The brownie vegetates my spine. Tea waffles the livelihood of battle. Wind is a character of indulgence. Traffic moves on Kailua Boulevard. A Marine writing poetry in Hawaii. Hemingway advised Marlena Dietrich, do not confuse movement with action. I do not recall any media headlines blown through desensitized eardrums that we ever stopped bombing campaigns on Iraq. Summer whispers of weapons inspections. Somewhere there is a family sleeping in the cold embrace of starvation, sleeping there, tawny limbs and rib cages wound around each other like rubber bands. And this brownie, in all splendor of commercial coffeehouse sweetness, is a gold mine I will not sleep. This next poem is entitled Hope. It doesn't matter what tomorrow is, she said. I just want to be with you now. Live for today, yes, I said. But time with you makes me want to end the future of us. After several minutes of silence, she staring at me with no expression on her face, I felt to almost slap her to get her to speak. Instead, I began to have sex with her, dispassionately. Anything to take those eyes, those swallowing eyes that depressed me to my core, to take those eyes and move them. Inwardly, I began to weep. And did so until I came, a brief respite into no feeling, then once more the uncomfortable silence. She began to stare as though she would consume me into a grief she held so close to her heart there was no longer a difference. I cannot explain the fear, I said. She cooed and preened, enfolding a numbing blanket of understanding over hurts of mine I never knew I had until I met her. I wondered if she was the awareness or the pain itself. I would ask, but she did not know. It is with such blindness that the heart first learns to love. This next poem was actually influenced by the same woman, but in a different tone. This poem is called The Solipsism of Truman Capote. Or the solipsism is the theory, assumption, or belief, A, that the self knows and can know nothing but its own modifications and states, B, that the self is the only existent thing, which makes the narrator begin to think, if only I exist, who but I will set the cool head aflame with smoke? Who but I must bevel the edges of perfect phrases to make them fly with easeful graces into the open arms of Avalon the muse awaiting? Their siren calls there to seduce me, and thereby my rhymes do rival the reach of rules retardedly I have enforced upon myself. What if I just let go? Techno-erotic and feeling psychotic, my neurotic hangover is still slightly erotic, a dichotomy of colliding Coptics who are kaleidoscopically apoplectic about the coming apocalypse, which I have heard whispered excitedly from optimistic lips like mystical kisses by mystic seers sucking peanuts and choking tears over their own solipsism, messing up their lipstick, being kissed by Catholic popes, doped up on young blonde hair and fervent hopes Jesus was human. Not just some hallucination of Truman, Capote, tripped out on peyote, sitting in his observer's chair, registering a cold, void stare on the set of Breakfast at Tiffany's, when, quite suddenly, God hits his psychosomatic with an epiphany, the soul. Origin of oranges or engines is found in the flange of the flesh. Visceral lust, Truman says in disgust. A rotten cantina is the main schema named for this peel of planet. He grumps with a hump, then punches his sick, sycophantic banana. That's not writing. That's typing, he says, while his metabolic rate is racing, in tune in time with his metatempo promise to space and rhyme well, a boy has to hustle his book. The director is wrapping up filming. Audrey Hepburn is tying up her hair into a bohemian bun. All this unbeknownst to Capote, who notices only the sun peeping from its unhewn dolmen arch of earth, the sliver of horizon his eyes are in, eclipsed by her silhouette. He is staring clairvoyant, this creative consultant, a result of his agent's shrewd negotiations, which catapulted him to success. Mixing daydreams and facts in his mind, copulating cotton candy with time, the milky metal of discharging nodes, art and art. Artifice, Sissy and Sisyphus, his masks, fiction and indirection exploding in all interrelated patterns of celebration. The griffin is no longer waiting for the fulcrum of change to shift the times and let fall the hammer, estranged rhymes, tongue now into the mouths of new lovers, a name spelled sunrise on the daughter is the revolution on his lips. Audrey Hepburn is walking toward her trailer. The phoenix has risen into morning from her nest, a final dress rehearsal on the way to dusty death. If only the tyrant was defeated in the hero's last breath. Beware the military-industrial complex. Whispered gently, like the recent request to renew the patent for buggy whips, backsliding obstinately, attempting to resurface among today's wireless network of wet mirth, bad ideas which are given birth in septuplet droves, delivered by obstetricians who need combs, lecturing attrition rights and reparation mites, contrasting fission fights and sexual nutrition. It is their mission, helping you with the difficult decision, the OBGYN says of insertion, not to mention desertion, which leaves millions of mothers without fathers holding on to ideas that fail to hold water, like abstinence education after you're already pregnant, because these ideas are no more formed with foundation than leadership occupations are filled by wise men's or women's, who are other than popular fanatics armed with pens, ready to commit to end violence by legislating silence. Dino might just wither away into extinction, while distinctions are awarded to fossil fools who wag the god in the name of odd, which is rather dog. Though compared to Capote, arriving floating down the halls of the New Yorker, first day on his job as a runner, wearing ballet pumps and a little black cape, silly you say, but he remembers all the hope and all the grace.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Yama Lake, reading his poetry. I want to talk about the rolling feel of your language, which is really evident in this last piece that you read. Words bumping into each other, a feeling of sort of free association. Is this an aesthetic that you're consciously developing, or something that just sort of comes in the writing process? So I guess I'm asking you to talk a little bit about the writing of this last piece.
Well, this last piece was really an experiment in controlled chaos, I guess. I guess you would call it. There is a lot of play with language, but the idea is to find a connection between words that either have rhyme or alliteration or I don't know, just sound good next to each other for reasons you can't explain, and put these words together, but I guess find a deeper meaning in those connections. This poem is actually highly influenced by my lack of understanding of Robert Graves' The White Goddess and how, you know, letters and words themselves can have this, you know, history of meaning, and just trying to discover that.
Mm-hmm. There was a sense of meter going on in the middle of it, too. Things kept shifting, and it seems like we've, as listeners, had places to rest, and then it would start again, and then there was a place to stop.
Well, I'm glad that you felt that there was a place to rest.
Not for long. But
not for long.
Not for long. I know you're going to be reading, I hope, some poems about related to your time as a Marine, but I want to ask you, before you do, about how your time as a Marine has impacted your writing life, and I know that's a big question, but maybe you can say a little bit about that before you read some of your next poems.
Well, that's a really hard question. I'll try to say something simple, which is that, you know, the Marine Corps actually gave my poetry a sense of discipline, which might sound, I guess, obvious or silly, but It actually gave me a sense of freedom in discipline, which I would never have expected or anticipated. I mean, I found that I could create more beautiful language. I could create more beautiful ideas by just giving them a sense of order to play against, I guess. So, you know, I guess that playing of free association against, like, a very rigid structure, you know, creates things that you just, I guess, never would expect.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, actually, this next poem that I would like to read about my experience, it's actually my anticipated experience of going into boot camp. I wrote this about a week before I left for San Diego. And I think that it has to do with some of my fears about losing poetry in my life by going into the Marine Corps, but attempts to reconcile those two, I guess, you know, rigid military structure and the freedom of poetry.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and read that?
This poem is called Remember Tripoli. Missing is sometimes having it right, much like mistaking a cigarette and inhaling a pen, receiving the ink of all the dreams you would write into poems. Braille fingers to the back of a page, what truth pressed too hard, trying to read where I was going before knowing. It's on the other side, slowly, take it slow. Mind, molasses jam, joyriding this last scrape of words, my tongue is dry, a well of inspiration seeking everywhere. Appease the appetite, clean glass splinters from feet, walking corridors of consequence in a dream. Humility, stabbing college offer in the heart, life support pumping barehanded like children flock at Game Boy button pushing. I heard a story about the head of a pawn destroyed, searched intently the body death throws out the window I am offering, watching the liver feed is caught, dead head in the noose, an abstract optimism locked in self-assumption, isolation, deciding happiness turned to spoil in the return of habit. Hang, recline, revive, write a page and throw it out. Smoke a cigarette, force the liver, habit, not happiness. Trial here. Devil's advocate searched for by the jury, finding the defense staring back, which misery of habit deciding fate does not exist if I do not accept Aristotle. Foreclosure. Signs were hung on the door when the first cracks of dawn broke the illusion of a final endless night. Dreaming to die, waking to live, were all obligations fulfilled, and no posts abandoned. No more noose wall mornings cutting the last marble strings of human exchange, swinging forth and back my fear of sophistry, a headless pawn failing all final exams. If I could find the spot where truth echoes, I would stand there and whisper memories of my children's future. Saul Williams' words spoke to me, and unexplained how this reflected street warrior would such an adverse reaction send me spinning to my feet, refuse fleeing into the hands some platoon of killers receiving. Beat back, lost, transcendent, romantic, surreal, to Greco Sappho weaving winding lyrics around her lesbian lovers, but first, Homer, about the bronze spearhead driven on through, smashed the bone apart, and the inward brain was all spattered forth. Yet, amid this torrent, violent blood release of words, redundant some and archaic, form-fitting, with such as, more come through alive when men consider each other, and there is no glory when they give way, nor warcraft either. What other side, then, what war poetry, was, always is, human poetry, synonymous, not learning to fight, kill someone with thumb, some dumb frat joke about meter, know the line, you will in your march step, can't step out or push up, no chow, can't push out against how? Poetry. Perfect constitution change. Am I just spitting words? What harm meant? No disrespect in being born, same, same, throwing words that do not sink, rise, push up, some theater boheme loose on the adjective, not knowing my objective, joking, at least I'll know projection. How old angel midnight would square me now, but with a little self-discipline, the trick I know is to keep the self. But I'm worried about testing doublethink by grunts and no poetry lip drill instructors stereotyped in probability unaware Byron had a sister or who he is might think the Iliad an anti-war poem. Instead of an expression of human endeavor, the beauty of poetry when it works smooth, the joints all flexed. which is projecting, not name-dropping, but moving so fast I lose myself enough to realize that I'm talking about naked in a room full of strangers, with no skin, no eyes, no ears, nothing called mine, in a room as one functioning unit. You cannot exist without me, not personally, but positional. This cannot exist without you, skimming the recruit manual until the paragraph comparing childbirth to artistic conception, how the poet-author serves the masculine role, the reader-listener the opposite, because in your hands is the possibility of germination. The poet back to push-ups, how many with an arm behind the back, smart-ass, alone, if I told the drill instructor I'm the feminine half to his drills, listening 3 months with no poetry, reading without books for an entire summer. Squatting Walden, Thoreau only brought the Odyssey to read a page here, there. He was reading the summer, birds, trees, plants, sound, sights. Interpretation of the environment is reading as first step to poetry. To be a radio, now a billion or more have them, even in their cars, going to work, waiting through traffic, and in the future maybe highways will look like large hamster tubes, vehicular hamsters shooting through between nature night, nature day with radios, and some who can afford tape decks, CD players remove themselves further from what they are and can be. In the future, commercials will fire across your windshield, and few will remember how Thoreau is the first being aware of his own ability as a radio. However, all will know his slogans, his latest cross-wired ad campaigns, borrowing, lending, neither credit and personal, business education instead of philanthropy. Beware of suits and jobs that require them. Reading, the most important aspect of radios, all frequencies are our expression, despite overplayed advertisements, country, emo, new metal songs, there's always diamond tuners, ear openers in the rough, like what you were listening to when morning reverie forced you awake at 04:30 and the radio was on only inside your head.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Yama Lake, reading his poetry. And that was from his self-published collection of poems, The Ocean of Europa. So let's talk a little bit about this, this poem that you wrote a week before going to boot camp. And you said afraid of losing poetry when you were going to become a Marine, and yet you said that you found more freedom within the discipline of writing as a result of being a Marine. Can you say a little more about that now after having read that poem?
Certainly. Well, I guess what I love about that poem is how much it, I just don't think it works in a lot of ways. As a poem, it has in some ways too much self-awareness and on the other hand, like, not enough. And I guess what I really got out of my experience in the Marine Corps was learning how to just work hard and force the poem into shape. I mean, a poem, you know, that's just raw doesn't connect to other people as much. I mean, this poem in some ways is perfectly understandable by me, but I mean, I don't think that it reaches out to other people enough.
It has a lot of private images and private movement, but yet there are those, then we come across the narrative points in the poem that are very clear, you know, so I mean we can plug in, we can follow also.
I certainly agree, and it was inspired by the discipline I was about to receive, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
I still appreciate reading it because I think that it is an important part of how I grew as an artist.
Mm-hmm. You have some other very different kinds of poems in front of you. Could you read, you know, some shorter, sort of more narrative pieces, almost as narrative as you get? So,
well, I'll try this one. This was the first poem I wrote arriving in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And it's called Witnessing First Snow in Pittsburgh. The beauty today is first snow, languid light fluffs, large and swirling everywhere, like children on a playground. Cold but running from class to work, work to class, I feel I am witnessing a kind of spring arriving. Winter does not need to be a dead time. Instead, it makes a life of its own. The sky is soft in gray cotton fleece sweatpants stretched across the firmament. Buildings huddle for warmth in steel complexities and other romantic thoughts of nature. In my heart's eye, my lover is dancing with me, a multicolored scarf floating around her neck, wearing her black leather coat buttoned up tight. As we dance, her cheeks are turning red as summer blood plums, ripe, juicy, and the warmth of her cheeks is running likewise down the length of my forearms, holding her closer and closer in our imaginary waltz. She is laughing. The beauty today is. Sunday morning. It's Sunday morning. I'm flipping through the want ads. Malted Oats Engineering, fearless co-pilot for Navy navigation needed, required interface internet savvy. My old lady simming the Morlock with the funnies. We got hitched on time, went Euro sabbatical, and never kept the color of our hair. There's a shingle we hung with the hook it goes to on a wall in the home we built. And the right below it we've rented two frames. The goods inside, though, are ours. Two genuine PhDs to their respected universities. We graduated, made the money flow a time or two, but we gave the shtick up for a titillating tenure where we just cut the rent. I'm a writer, selling stories smacked out on a typewriter, faxed through the payphone, printed at the Inquirer, the Sun, only the reputable talc tabloids, because you can't use alliteration in well-paid articles. My old lady's an artist. We keep a desert flat here since they drove us out of Barstow. Our diligence to vigilance, delinquents, names were shouted. Town hall, court, and we spend two nights in the cooler. We blew a fuse on the spray can, inked our names on the wall, while America leaked out. By now, everyone's heard how with red sky we painted one story. The brushes never dry and the cigarettes always lit. The creek can't knock us down. Wood, one room, one floor, iron stairs spiral to a rooftop featherbed. We keep a desert flat here, outside of Barstow. We own 2 degrees. We have lots of artwork. I'll set down the classifieds and gaze at her. What, she asks, and the first act's complete. You want to fool around? I ask. 8 in the morning, there's sheets we haven't made. She starts to whistle. I can whistle Dixie. We both whistle our way upstairs.
You know, your work has sort of a California feel, that it's that fast-moving, jumpy rhythm, and I know that you grew up with a lot of poetry around you. Can you talk just a little bit about that?
Well, I had the fortunate childhood of growing up in coffee houses, and my father was a poet and self-publisher. He actually published quite a lot of poets from Denver and Venice and L.A. and numerous others. And he, all total, I think, published about 50 works of poetry in his lifetime. He passed away about 10 years ago, or actually when I was 11, so when I was around 10 years old. But still in that short time, I just grew up getting an appreciation for the word and what poetry can do and the community that it can create, and just a love of language. And so I've tried to keep that with me my mm-hmm. entire life.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an affinity, do you think, for the California School of Poetry because of that? Or?
I didn't know there was a California School of Poetry. But I suppose...
The beat poets, the West Coast poets, I mean...
I suppose so. You know, it's interesting because some of the early beat poets came from the East Coast, and mm-hmm. you know, so I never thought of it that way. But certainly, I mean, I do love Gary Snyder's work. I don't know.
Yeah, there's something in there that's
Lou Welch. Actually, I discovered Albert Sejo when I was in Hawaii, and I just thought that, and I suppose that is a West Coast sort of feel, just an openness. Mm-hmm. But you know, when I was really young, I think the first classical poetry I was interested in, I was just drawn to, you know, Walt Whitman and Byron and Keats and, you know, romantic poets and transcendentalists and naturalists, and I suppose it all still has a connection to the outdoors.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have time for a little bit more poetry.
Well, this poem's more free association. And it's a more recent one. It's called War Anthem. Neighbor sifts spittle on breath that screams, foul raven magic of midnight, train oiled the train tracks, shuffles pious, priestly feet on dirt, scarred vigilance. Dream the Kevlar wound, stitch the fiber-fed bodies like a Wheaties dream, associate. Dislocation as a single song, trash the violin composer, molten lavaed to the retirement chair of art. Without passion, the will drops. What rises in its place is the catalyst, free of bindings, playing the winning hand, hastening the trust. We are not where we sleep against, whose back we lean on, the other we, who lies upon a crevice, wide, wider, widest. Dribble baby thoughts, baby arms around the shield, lit by coal, by oil, by ethanol, by dinosaur bones, no matter which way the wind changes. Hills, old-fashioned, are the industrial hearth, despite what toil waste is crying. There is no den too deep without the laughter. Freely, O babe, what star will ride my back if you forsake me? Whose boom fills my need to free, to act onward, to cradle something more than words and feel? Yes, something more than forever inside, the boondocks of the private mind. Another cold shower for the heart, imagine better than the hindsight. Fools suffer glad bag in decadence, in rage, the naive art. We fish the winds we cannot eat. This poem is called A Desert Poem. The desert cactus flower blooms, pink in her cradling hands, captured by my eye, removed through the lens of the camera, which fails with my words to capture what I see. The warmth of the sun still soft against cool wind, early spring wildflowers, my wife's hair and straw hat, Death Valley and an empty road with the Hawaiian license plate, all images and feelings that fall in the snowflakes of now, drops of desert melting in my open mouth.
It's the poetry of Yama Lake. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's great. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Joseph Wilk and Lauren Wolf. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody here on Independent Public Radio, 91.3 WYEP. She had a smile that swerved. She had a smile.